Hello, everybody. This is Olivier Tischendorf. Tonight I'm going to interview Mike Swanson from WallStreetWindow.com. He interviewed me a while back, so today's a good opportunity for me to let him speak and introduce himself. So, hi, Mike. Why don't you introduce yourself to my readers or listeners in this case and tell them what kind of trader you are, and what I would especially be interested in would be the three most important things for new and struggling traders to pay attention to. What you think are the three most important things? So, up to you.
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks for having me. I follow what you write on your site quite often. It, like you said, we've talked before, but basically, my website's WallStreetWindow.com. I've been investing and trading in the stock market since like 97, I think about the same amount of time as you have, actually.
Yeah, and that's a bit longer.
Oh, is it? Okay. Well, I'll get to answering your three questions and kind of talk about myself my experience as a way to do it. When I started out, I'll get to your three questions. So what's the most important thing for new people to realize or understand when it comes to the market? And that's kind of like, what are the three things that I've learned the most the hard way, I guess? And the first thing, I think, is people have to ask themselves what is the time frame they want to use when they make trades in the market. How long do they want to hold things? Because that, and one other thing I'll get to in a second, I think has the most impact on how you look at the market and the risk you want to take and so forth. So, for example, I've gone from one extreme to another in a certain sense. When I first started out, it was 1999, 97, 98. And the internet stocks were real hot, and the stock market in the United States was essentially a bubble or going into its final blow-off of the last giant secular bull market we had here. Mm-hmm. And I was day trading. I was buying stuff one day and selling it the next, holding overnight. And what I was able to do was buy stocks. I'd make a list of stocks every night, and I'd say I'd have like 30 stocks, and I'd buy a couple the next day that were merely breaking out of 52-week new highs, and they would go up like 20-30% afterwards in a day's time.
So let me ask you a follow-up question. So you would focus on all-time high stocks at that time?
Yeah, stocks that consolidated for 1 or 2 weeks and were then breaking out to new all-time highs. And they would go up 20-30% in a day, which is you don't see that now, right?
Okay,
That was the bubble time. It was insane.
So in terms of time frame, you would focus on the all-time high stocks during the parabolic up move of a sector bubble, and then just be a momentum trader?
Yeah, well, that's what I was doing back then, and now I don't do that at all. I'm trying to hold stuff now for 1 or 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm, instead of a day, which is completely different. But
so would you consider yourself a position trader, or more even longer term than position trading?
Even longer term. What's happened is at first I would say I was day trading. And then I went into more what I would call position trading, where I was trying to hold stuff for a couple weeks, which I would mostly do. And now I'm trying to do more investing, where I'm holding for years at a time.
Let me ask another question.
Okay.
What's the main reason why you switched your time frame? What made you switch to holding longer term?
Well, it's a couple of things. One first of all is the shorter time frame of day trading. I can't do that effectively anymore like I was able to at the beginning because stocks aren't moving as much as they used to. So you'd have to use a whole different strategy than what I was doing in 99. So I adapted by going for a longer time frame to get a bigger move in a stock. And then also, I've become where I want to do less day-to-day management of my positions and have to do less work at the at what I'm doing in the stock market. So the shorter the time frame that you are using, the more you're going to have to watch the market, the more you're going to have to make decisions,
Yeah,
and
and
the longer the time frame, the less you have to.
we're not getting any younger, right?
No. So as time has gone on, I want to do less work when it comes to investing and make it simpler. But the key is for someone that's new, I think they really need to figure out what time frame is that they're using. And I don't think people really do that. They just buy something and say, well, they think they're investing in something when they're not. And what I mean is, I think to invest, you have to really say to yourself, I can buy this and hold it for a couple years. And people have no strategy at all when it comes to doing that, and they end up selling out real quickly or selling too soon or whatever. And the same thing happens for someone that's trying to do a short-term trade. They'll say, I'm going to do a short-term trade here, and then it drops, and instead of getting out, which they should be doing if they're doing a short-term trade, they hold and now say, oh, I'm investing now. They don't really have a strategy that's planned out and it's linked to the time frame that they're taking actions in.
So apart from the time frame, what you probably want to, I don't know, but is so you're paying attention to does the trading style fit your personality or suit your personality? And are you also paying attention to valuation, or do you have a contrarian approach, or what would be the, I'm trying to, the second and third most important thing you pay attention to?
Yeah, well, I do. I used to never look at valuations, really, but I do now a lot. But the valuations I look at are more what is the entire market valued at. So I look at stuff like the cyclically adjusted P/E ratio for an entire stock market and look for markets that are undervalued and try to avoid ones that are overvalued. So, for example, now, the S&P 500 is a historically high cyclically adjusted P/E ratio, 23 or above 23, and it's been in a bull market now for 4 years. So I have a tough time justifying buying new positions to try to hold for a couple years in the United States at this point because it's got a high valuation and it's in a long, mature bull market. So I don't think it makes sense to invest there. Now, maybe it makes sense to do a position trade to try to hold for a couple months or weeks, but not to hold for a couple years. To do that, I think you have to look outside the United States to cheap markets that have already been in bear markets and are either in a 1 year bull market or basing out. So, for example, I look to markets such as Italy and Greece and much of Europe for that, and maybe individual sectors such as the commodity markets that were in bear markets and I think could probably put on a bottom or making a transition. So
So
to
you're looking at the most beaten down commodity sectors like let's say coffee, natural gas, etc. or
Yeah, coffee and natural gas and so forth. For example, as an individual stock, an example would be Gazprom, which is Russia's largest natural gas company. Natural gas prices have crashed. That stock has crashed too over the past couple of years. But now it's paying a 5% dividend, and it's got like a P/E ratio of 2 or 3, which is incredibly cheap. And I think it's probably put in a bottom and ended the bear market. And it's not above its long-term moving average now. So you could either, you know, try to average into a position or wait. You know, how you get in is a different, you know, thing. But
when you
positions I'm looking for.
Let me ask you a question, because you said something along those lines. You know, it has probably put in a bottom. I want to talk about stop losses here. When you buy something, do you decide on how low something can go and then, you know, say, okay, this is where I'm going to exit my position? Or do you really buy more? Or what's your take on, you know, what do you do, or what makes you say, okay, I'm wrong with this trade?
Yeah, that's a key point too. Okay, that's like when you ask me what are the three things people need to do. The number one is know the time frame and have a strategy for that time frame. Mm-hmm. The second thing would be control your risk, which is what you're asking me. And I've changed the way I do that also. In the past, I really think the shorter the time frame you're using, the fewer positions you can manage, because you got to keep a tight track of what's going on with each individual position, and the tighter your stop losses have to be. Conversely, if you really are a good trader, a short-term trader, you can also have larger positions and even, I think, use margin if you really, really disciplined with cutting losses. And that's, you know, what I've done in the past too. And as I've extended the time, when I did the day trading, I was just buying like one, two, or three positions at a time. With Ruth, like if it was a stock, three stocks at a time, or maybe five. If it was neat, they didn't really have ETFs back then, or they weren't popular. But in the mid 2000s, I was using more ETFs to try to position trade the whole stock market or an individual market. Mm-hmm. And in that case, I would sometimes even go on margin, but I would use tight stop loss orders using the daily charts.
But with longer position trade type of.
I'm doing something a little bit different now. Instead of, let's put it to you this way. If I went out tomorrow if I put 50% of my money in SPY, let's say, the ETF for the S&P 500, I'm now 50% invested in that. And let's say I want to try to swing trade that for a couple weeks or something. I think the S&P will go up 100 points or something. So I want to buy that. The way I would manage that is I would say, well, I'm 50% invested in this. I don't want to risk more than 1% or 2% on this trade, because that's a large amount of my account. So I'll have to put a stop loss on it, 4 or 5% away from where I got in. I should try to make that stop loss below the last support line so I can have room. And that's how I manage that. Now, what I'm doing now is a little bit different, because I'm not buying one or two positions. I own over 30 positions, and most of them are only 2 to 3% of my overall account. So in that case, if I say put 2% of my money in this Gazprom stock, if it went to zero, I'm just losing 2% of my overall account.
So you're not losing a stop loss with each individual position?
Not really, but I don't have an active stop loss on them, but I'm still watching the overall trend of these markets. If I thought we're going into a bear market or something is dramatically changing, I'd start selling stuff. But as a whole, what I'm doing is not really putting stop loss orders on things, but making periodic adjustments. So right now, we're having a bit of a correction. At some point, I think it'll turn. And
I've noticed in the past that, when a stock is really weak, you tend to sell it and then replace it.
Yeah, I may do stuff like that.
Okay.
But the key time for me to really try to sell stuff is after the market's rallied for a period of time, and then to reduce some positions that are lagging, and to raise some cash in my account. And I think that's a key thing that everyone, well, day trading is one thing, but if you're a position trader or an investor, I think one thing you need to do is be able to be in a position to buy after there's a correction in the market, no matter how a day trader is always in and out, so it doesn't necessarily matter for them, but anyone else has to be able to be in a position to be buying after a market correction, whether you're going to hold stuff for weeks or months or years. I think no matter what, you have to be able to do that. So you have to have a strategy that will get you in a position to be able to do that. So that means you probably need to take profits at some point with some of your account, or be putting more money into your account, something you should be doing to be able to be in that position. Whereas I think too often it's the opposite, that people are in the opposite position where when there's a correction in the market, they end up having to sell because they bought on the top or they bought on margin or something, and then they forced the panic.
So let me sum this up. So you're paying attention to the time frame, valuation, and risk control. And risk control, the way you see it, is probably best defined as paying attention to what your overall portfolio is doing.
Yes, and not owning too much of anything. If you're going to hold stuff without stop loss orders, then you've got to use small positions.
Okay. You know,
2 or 3% or something is good. There's actually, I'm going to write this weekend, I'm going to write a report actually about risk management and the number of positions that's optimal for that, and for investing. And write it. I'll send it to you, and if you want, you can send it to your people. But that's what I'm going to research this weekend. But I can just tell you what the conclusion is. The statistics are, I don't know where this comes from, but some books say 10 positions is enough. In reality, you need about 30 positions to reach the optimal point. And anything above that, the effects are very minimal. If you have 100 positions, it's not really much better than having 30, but 30 is basically the kind of the magic number. 10 is better than nothing. But again, if you're using ETFs and not individual stocks, then you don't need, they're already diversified. You don't need 30 ETFs or something, but if you're using individual stocks, you really need, over 30 or more, really.
Okay. So, another question, I'm a big fan of books and learning from decent books. So my question would be, what are your three favorite books? Let's say your favorite book about technical analysis, your favorite book about, trading psychology and maybe trading in general, or whatever comes to your mind.
Yeah, sure. Well, I always still recommend the Stan Weinstein book because...
Great.
Secrets of Profiting in Bull and Bear Markets is one of the best books I've ever read. And
I agree. This is one of the books I recommend in my book section.
And he basically talks, of all time frames, basically. And I still use the long-term moving averages and the chart patterns that he talks about. And I really think it's one of the most important books I've ever read in my life, really. What if I think about it that way? And then also, I like the Jesse Livermore biography, Reminiscences of a Stock Operator, that was written in the 30s. And it also, it doesn't have like a magic method in the book, but it gets you in the mind of a trader and also an investor. He kind of did both things and blew himself up also multiple times, so you see someone making mistakes and getting greedy, and it's like behind, he was also one of the most successful people in the stock market ever. He started with nothing, and made equivalent of $100 million in today's money.
What I like about that book is, you know, when you're done reading this one, you absolutely know if you want to be a trader or not. This is, you're either hooked or you're not. And I think that's also part of the value this book has to offer. So it's a quick and cheap way to find out if trading is for you or not.
And then the final, you know, subject of evaluations and that type of investing, I haven't really found one great book about that. Now, there's a good report someone had put on the internet, a fellow named, you could find this on, if you do a Google search, if you type Mabane-Faber CAPE ratio, you could find some of the reports he's written in the past year. This is a fund manager that used the cyclically adjusted PE ratio and back tested it over all these markets to see, you know, how well it works. And
yeah, I remember you posted a list a few months back where he listed the PE ratios of European countries and actually all countries, and you used that one, I think, if memory serves me well.
Now, there's a book also. That's a great simple report. Like, so there's no one for me. Like the Weinstein book is for me like a Bible of technical analysis. It keeps things really simple. It's not like a billion indicators, which I think that's a trap of technical analysis that people fall into, is trying to study too much stuff or, you know, try to find some magic combination of indicators. I don't think that exists. Instead, I think you need to understand the philosophy behind it and the basics, and that book does it. But as far as the valuation stuff, I don't really know the one great book. There's another one I could recommend too. It's called Anatomy of the Bear. And what that book does is look at the United States and the four past major 10-year bear markets and see what's in common when they bottomed. And it talks about different valuation metrics and ratios. And you could, you know, that reading that can give you an idea of some of the things that worked in the past here and kind of give you, you know, you could, if you read that, then look at this guy's reports, it'll to give you a good idea of this valuation business.
Okay, great. So I know that, or people can go to your website, which is WallStreetWindow.com. You do, or you did, a lot of podcasts in the past. Do you have a favorite podcast or interview listeners could check out, especially if they're, you know, new and struggling traders?
Well, I don't, not really, because almost all the interviews I do, I've done, is basically just asking people what do they think of what's going on in the market right at the moment. I don't do enough educational stuff, which I really should probably do. It probably benefit people more, actually. Maybe we should do more of them ourselves. Just me and you, you know?
Yeah, we already decided to do more casual interviews in the future, so we'll see what. But talking about education, I mean, I have done almost no talking. I've recently read a book which I really want to recommend, and it's about you know, market psychology, personality traits, etc. It's called What I Learned Losing $1 Million, written by Jim Paul and Brendan Moynihan. I don't know how to pronounce that, but I guess people can find it. Title is What I Learned Losing $1 Million. Good book. I recommend it. You can buy it. Money back guarantee. No, just kidding. But no, it's. I would really recommend that for new traders. That's a good way to.
Well, what did they learn?
Pardon?
How did they lose the money?
What do you mean? How do they?
Oh, in the book, how did the people lose the money?
It's one person. It's because he got cocky and because he thought he knew it all and no risk control, etc. And then he tells the story. And afterwards, the second part of the book is, you know, an analysis of all the psychology behind this losing and what's necessary in order to become a successful trader. So it's really interesting. It's really two parts. The first part, how he lost this $1 million, and then the analysis of all the psychological aspects.
Well, I didn't lose $1 million, but I don't. That was $35,000 when I started.
Yeah.
I actually think that's a key, you know, for new people. I think it may be that only through, you know, I've heard, I don't know if it's true, but I've heard they used to say, like, short-term traders, almost all of them lose money. And if you can survive the first year and learn from that, then you'll be successful. And I know myself, my very first experience in the stock market, I had inherited $15,000, and I opened up a small account. Well, I opened up a $15,000 account, and I bought three stocks with that money. And within a week, I didn't think that was exciting enough, so I got a hot tip off the internet, I read about it in a magazine, in Business Week, and the article convinced me that a stock would go up, would triple if I bought it. So I took my $15,000 and I put all my money in that stock, and I immediately got on Yahoo Finance and I opened up an account and I got on the message boards, and I talked with other people that were in the stock too, and we were all convinced that it was going to go up. And the reason was that this company was, which sounds kind of crazy today, but the reason was that this was an internet company and it was going to spin off a division of itself, and other companies that were doing this, the stocks would all shoot up, and then the spinoff would happen, or they would crash. So I thought, it doesn't happen now, but that's what was going on then. So I thought, well, this is a bank, I can bank my money on this, because, you know, in this magazine, it's showing it's happened over and over, and, you know, it's easy money. And so anyway, I was talking on the people on Yahoo, and they believed it too. And I said, well, my plan is I'm going to sell, you know, the day it IPOs, because it should be at a really high price, and if it does what everything else has done, it'll crash, you know. Mm-hmm. And one guy said, well, I believe in it too. I've taken out a home mortgage loan, and I'm putting more than what I own in it. I'm putting my life in it. Mm-hmm. And someone said, don't sell it. They told me, don't sell. This one's different than the others.
Yeah, this time's different.
Yeah, this one's real. This isn't just an internet company. This is going to change the way everyone does business. This is much different. Yeah. So anyway, it happened. It was like magic, and my $15,000 turned into $50,000, and I was I never had money like that before. I never experienced anything like that in my life. And I thought,
you were hooked.
Yeah. Well, I said to myself, I sold, and I announced on the Yahoo message board with these people that I have sold my position, and I've made this money. And someone replied and said, I'm a damn fool. I should never have sold and given up on this company. And two things happened: the stock crashed, and the people who didn't sell and take their profits lost it all. I don't know, you know. So, amazing. And then, go ahead.
It all comes down to what you said. You know, risk control. No matter how you define it, but you have to have some kind of risk control. Otherwise, you're completely.
It's going to catch up with you. Yeah. So, but what happened to me though is, I just want to. I don't want to go on forever to tell the story for the people. What happened to me though is I made that money, and I thought to myself, this is incredible, you know. Yeah, I'll never have to work a day of my life again.
Yeah, I think.
anyway, I didn't use proper risk control, and I turned that 50 back into 15. And from that experience, I had to learn to stop doing dumb stuff to make money. So.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, the book I recommended is about that. You know, I mean, people feel attracted to this no-brainer trade, you know, can't lose trade. And at some point in time, you know, they do this trade the way you described it, but they lose everything. And that makes them think about, you know, strategy, risk control, etc. So no matter what, it's a good experience. But you have to learn from it. And
that's the key is I was able, you know, I lost all the profit I had made on that. And at some point I had to say to myself, if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to lose everything.
Yeah.
And I've got to stop, and I've got to not just read books, but implement.
Yeah. It's interesting because most people start out that way. You know, they have no clue whatsoever. They buy something and then they make big money, and then, you know, they lose it all because they don't understand that it was pure luck. And
yeah.
Anyway, so
I went too long, but that's but it's fine. I can't help myself.
It's no problem. It's good because I think a lot of people can relate to that. And the important thing is really to take one step back and to analyze oneself and the situation and other people, new traders, and there's always new traders coming to the markets, and they all make the same experiences, and why not listen to that experience and learn from you. Okay, again, what's your website?
Oh, wallstreetwindow.com.
Okay, fantastic. So we'll do some follow-up interview and next
sure.
time. It's going to be either more educational or more casual or whatever. Yeah, that was. These were my final words, your final words.
Oh, thanks for having me, and enjoyed talking with you. And I'm going to check out the book you recommended because I haven't read that one yet. And it sounds like a good one.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.